This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County, and I want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and it's right behind Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you'd like to give them a call, it's 713-4639. And what they do, they'll go into your home and make sure that they will take care of all the duties that you were responsible for before, but you no longer can take care of them yourself. And believe it or not, they're there 24/7. And they'll not only take care of the inside chores, but they'll also run errands for you and make sure that life is not a problem for you. And you can pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And that will be one call, which is 713-4639, that you'll be glad you called. And I have a very special guest on today. I know that we had it on our list, our class of 59 list, Diana, that Judge Mark Rogers was going to be on today. But he came by yesterday, and he's got a trial case over in Franklin. And I was so tickled that he picked you to come over today because you come from a very special family. And you've got a job that is one of the toughest jobs in Rutherford County, but there's no doubt in my mind that you can handle it. And you were a Benson, and you're now a Burns.
That's right.
Diana Benson Burns. And the Benson is a very famous name in Rutherford County. Would you tell us why it's so famous?
Well, my father's father was Doc Benson, who mm-hmm. was... involved in, I guess you'd say, county politics here.
Very
for
much so.
Many years, mm-hmm. mostly before I was born and when I was a young child. But when people, I professionally go by Diana Benson Burns because mm-hmm. I was still a Benson when I started practicing law. So mm-hmm. when people know that's my maiden name, they ask me if I was, a lot of times will ask me if I was related to Doc Benson, who was mm-hmm. my grandfather, my father's father.
He was one of the most unique people, and when you talk about colorful people and people that had a tremendous amount of responsibility and was instrumental in a lot of changes and a lot of things that have made Rutherford County the way it is, Doc Benson stands at the very top, and you and I were discussing him a little bit earlier. He was one of those people that when you went into the county court and business was done, he's not the one that stood up and made all the recommendations and would battle with the other county commissioners. When he got up there, he knew how everything was going to be before it started.
Yeah, he was kind of the behind-the-scenes person.
He was.
Yep.
And I've never seen anybody wield as much respect as he did when he was there. And every county commissioner and everybody in the community knew that if you wanted to get somewhere or you wanted things changed, Doc was the man to go to.
Yeah, and he knew how to get things done. I admired that about mm-hmm. him. If something needed to be done or mm-hmm. if somebody made him aware of something that needed to be done, he didn't waste any time getting it done. He would make it happen.
Now tell me personally, being his granddaughter, how was he behind the scenes? Because he was always driven to try to do something, and he was so... he wanted to be done so well, and he always would go to the experts to make sure that he was doing what needed to be doing. So he seemed like he was always on that go button all the time. Now, how was he for you as a granddaughter?
I'd have to agree with that. He was that way. Of course, I thought he could do no wrong. I'm mm-hmm. sure he wasn't a perfect person, but
none of us are.
But in my eyes, he was. But if anything he found out that any of his family needed, he would, you know, do whatever he could to make it happen. And in fact, I was telling you earlier about mm-hmm. when I was 15 and ready to get my first job, he found out that I was lined mm-hmm. up to start working at a drive-through burger place that didn't have any inside
and
air conditioning.
And the name of it was?
Tops.
And every yep. teenager that was a teenager when I was growing up remembers Tops.
Yes, yeah. Oh, it was good. Some good hamburgers.
Oh, yes.
But it was my cousin's in-laws that I think ran it at that mm-hmm. time, so they were going to give me a job doing that. And when he found out there was no air conditioning, he said, no, you don't need to be trying to do that in the middle of the summer. This was mm-hmm. when I was in high school, and it was a summer job. Mm-hmm. So he found me a job typing up minimus is for Anna Reed when she worked for Judge Buckner.
And there's another name.
Yep.
Now, how was Anna to work with? Because she was a very businesslike person.
Yes, but I loved her to death. She was the sweetest lady. And, you know, her daughter, Jackie, now works
right.
in the building that I work in over
right.
at the judicial building. But I thought the world of Anna. She was a real sweetheart. She was, you know, her she talked with that funny accent.
German accent.
Yes. And she would talk, mm-hmm. you know, just a mile a minute, you know. And she didn't mess around getting the job done, but she was very sweet. I really enjoyed working with her.
And she made things just the way they should be for Judge Buckner, because that's the way he wanted it.
That's right.
He is one of the fairest, toughest judges I have ever known. And he was one of those people that would not back down from what his rules were set up for court. He would always stay within that realm,
right?
Which everybody respected, of course.
Sure.
Now, you went from there. You also worked at the courthouse
yeah.
for John Mankin when he was the county judge or
yeah.
the county executive, I guess.
I worked with him, yes, when he was county executive, and with Vicki and Shirley that are still over there now. And then
are.
Carolyn started working there about that time when I was in mm-hmm. high school, and I worked at several different jobs around mm-hmm. the county when I was in high school, and then as I was coming home
at
the
Oakland
summers
that
during,
you went
mm-hmm, yeah I graduated from
yeah.
Oakland, and then when I would come home during the summers from college, even Granddaddy would put me to work somewhere around the county.
You kind of led a charmed life, didn't you?
Well, I was fortunate to have the family that I did. Yep.
I have known every one of them, and they are the nicest, sweetest people. And what made you want to go into the legal field?
Well, I enjoyed political science. I was a political science minor. I majored in English, but I enjoyed studying that. But it was also, and this is going to sound a little sentimental, but I really liked working on the square from when I was
I wonder why
yeah.
that's sentimental.
Yep. So I really wanted to come back, you know, and practice law on the square here in Murfreesboro.
Now, where did you go to law school?
Memphis.
Memphis, to me, would be one of the toughest places to go, especially over at Memphis State, I guess. Was it Memphis State that you went to, or was it
the They had just UK changed
State.
The name.
Okay.
Yeah, they just changed it to University of Memphis, I think, the year before I started law school there. But I loved the law school. I had some wonderful professors and some wonderful classmates, but I will say I wasn't crazy about living in Memphis, and I was ready to get back to Middle Tennessee.
It's not Murfreesboro, is it?
No, it's not. But there aren't many places like Murfreesboro.
Well, I'm going to agree with that. Now, let's get to what you do, because this is one of the most interesting jobs in Rutherford County, and it's one of the toughest jobs. Now, you have a law degree, and you are operating as you related to me before we went on, it's like a magistrate, but a judge too. Because you're in the child support division.
Right. I do this. My title is child support magistrate, and it's a state position.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when the type of cases that I hear used to be handled by the circuit and chancery judges here, and of course they still are if they appeal my decision. But about 4 years ago, Judge Rogers and some of the other circuit and chancery judges. Went to the state legislature and the administrative office of the courts and said we could sure use a child support magistrate. It's a federal and state scheme that provides for this type of position. And so they got a bill passed with the help of, I think, Kent Coleman and Jim Tracy at that time. Got a bill passed to add some more magistrates here in this district in Rutherford and Cannon County. And then also they added some other magistrates across the state at that time. So now I hear the child support docket that was previously heard by them. It helps them, of course, you know, lighten their load a little bit, helps them focus on some of the other circuit and chancery matters because the dockets were getting so congested.
Do you handle all the child supports initially, the hearings?
For the most part, unless they're filed privately, like maybe as part of a divorce petition. And those divorces are still heard by the trial judge that's assigned to that divorce case. But if it's just a child support case, or if it's where somebody's coming back to maybe modify a child support order that was set when somebody was initially divorced, most of those come through me. And it's because they've gone through the 4D office, which is our DA's child support division here.
So it's already preset what the guidelines are when it actually gets to your level.
Yeah, there's a complicated child support worksheet that the state of Tennessee has for calculating child support. But I hear not just the initial setting of child support, but also enforcement. If somebody's not paying the way they're supposed to, then I'll hear those cases to try to compel them to comply with their child support order. Or if somebody thinks that the child support should go up or down and wants it modified, I'll hear those cases and take a look at the current situation to see if they qualify under the child support guidelines for a reduction or an increase.
Do you ever hear from anyone that's satisfied the way the child support is set up? Because to me, child support in some areas is kind of like splitting the baby, and then other areas, it seems like that would be one area that nobody's happy.
Well, I would say that's true of a lot of people that come into our courtroom, and especially with the post-divorce cases, because of course they're not happy to begin with that they had, and that's never something that's easy to go through. So those are some of our more contentious cases, but we get all kinds of litigants that come in. Some people that are understanding and are glad that we're there to help set and modify and enforce child support, and then some people that just don't get it, don't want to have to pay child support, and don't want to be in that courtroom.
How do you try to impress upon them their responsibilities to their child? I mean, that's got to be tough.
Well, of course, my job is to do what the law provides, and so sometimes that means that if they haven't complied with a support order, then they have to go to jail until they pay a certain amount towards their child support in the form of a cash bond. And unfortunately, that's usually the most effective way of getting people's attention. But sometimes it doesn't have to get to that. You know, sometimes as long as they understand that this is something that the law requires them to do to make sure that a child is provided for, that they do their part. And that if they don't do their part, that there is a possibility of incarceration. Sometimes just the threat of incarceration is enough for people to comply. And sometimes people just do it because they know it's the right thing to do. Where they're enforcing mostly for the cases where people, you know.
Is there any flexibility inside your authority? Say an individual's amount that he's supposed to be paid on a monthly level is, say, $500. Then all of a sudden, maybe he has lost or she has lost their job and they're no longer able to bring in that kind of money. What do you do in a case like that?
Well, they can file a petition to modify, but even if they haven't, and we see that a lot on my enforcement docket where somebody might have been ordered to pay, like you said, $500 a month back when they were making $20,000 or $30,000 a year, and then they've lost that job and all they're drawing is unemployment, or maybe not even that if they hadn't been working at that employer long enough or something. And so as far as the contempt issue goes, they're not subject to incarceration unless they have a present ability to pay and they're not doing it. That's part of what the law requires is that, you know, there was an order of support, that they didn't comply with the order of support, and that they willfully didn't comply when they had the ability to do so. So if they've, you know, paid something towards their support obligation, even if it's not the full amount, then of course that's taken into consideration. And if they've done what they've been able to do within their means, then there wouldn't be a grounds for finding them in contempt.
Well, is that something that bodes well with their ex-spouse? Because I have seen so many times that I have talked on both sides, and it seemed like there's never any consensus of what's right or wrong. And I've known a number of ladies that have gone months and even up in the years where the one that's supposed to be paying has not and has found all kinds of excuses, whatever it may be. That's got to be hard for you to read through all that.
Yes, and you know, we have different ways of dealing with that once it gets to us. Now, of course, sometimes they don't file anything for years and years and years, so we can't do anything about it until they're before the court, but once they get before the court, we stay on top of them, and that's one of the luxuries of having a child support magistrate, as opposed to when this was having to be heard by the trial judge, is the dockets were so congested that they weren't able to set reviews.
And they're lengthy.
Right, that's right. But now that I'm doing that full time, we can set reviews and we look at cases, you know, every 60 days or so, whatever might be appropriate depending on the particular case. But we'll, for example, if we have somebody that come in that says he or she can't pay their child support because they've lost their job, then I'll give them a form that they have to take with them to show that they're actively seeking employment, and then they're required to come back to court and show me that. And if they still haven't found a job, we might give them another chance. But, you know, and then there comes a time when we say, okay, you don't seem to be putting enough effort into this, and we have to look at the contempt issue. But so we look at each case and expect people to do what they need to do to try to bring themselves into a position where they can comply with their support.
Does each person, are they required to have an attorney, or pretty much when they go before you?
Most of the cases that come before me, the parties are what we call pro se, which means they're representing themselves. The state of Tennessee has an attorney there from the DA's office, and here in Murfreesboro, that's Miriam Ward, that is the assistant district attorney that handles child support here in Circuit and Chancery, which is what I hear here in Murfreesboro. And she's there representing the state. And then there's usually a party that has one, either the party receiving support or the party paying support, that has come into Miriam's office and said, you know, I need some assistance with filing this paperwork, which is basically their job. They don't represent either party, but they help facilitate the filing of the paperwork and so forth. And then the parties are actually usually there representing themselves. But this, if there's a possibility of incarceration, then I will ask them if they want counsel appointed. If they're indigent, then I'll appoint counsel. Or sometimes they, of course, hire their own lawyer.
I think we've got a caller on the line, Diana, so we're going to have to put our ears on.
Okay.
And caller, welcome aboard with Diana Benson Burns.
Sure. My question today is, if both parties agreed to a set amount of child support, say 2 years ago, the father continued to pay child support, never been late, actually has more money in the account than it's supposed to be because of error on the court's part, but the ex wants to claims that she hadn't been working, or she's not physically unable to work, but she wants to readjust the child support due to her not having a job or her income being lower than initially it was. Is it possible for her to raise the child support if the father income hasn't gone up 3% in 3 years?
Well, let me speak to first specifically, I can't speak to any specific cases that might be going on in front of me here in Rutherford County. Do you have a case pending here in Rutherford County?
It ain't pending yet. It was just they had asked me about it, you know, and you know, just maybe history. Has anything like ever happened before? Is if the mother or whoever is not able to work, she's physically able.
Right. I can just answer generally how the child support guidelines work. I can't answer your specific question in case it does end up coming before me, but just in general terms, I can tell you what the child support guidelines say. When we do the child support worksheet, we will look at both parties' incomes. So if one party's income goes up or down, it could affect the support obligation, even if it's, for example, if the party that's receiving support, if their income goes down, it could theoretically cause the child support obligation to increase because their income has gone down, and it compares both parties' incomes in setting that child support. That's not to say that would be the case, you know, in your specific case, and I couldn't comment on that, obviously, but theoretically that could affect the support obligation. And then from the aspect of whether somebody is making as much money as they have the ability to earn, the guidelines address that issue as well. And of course, we have to look at that on a case-by-case basis, but there are people that if they're not making as much money as they have the ability to make based on their work history, education, that type of thing, then income can be what we call imputed to them, which means that their income is set at a higher amount than what they're actually making because that's what the court finds their earning capacity to be.
All right, then. So that kind of clears the mud up a little bit.
And we have another caller on the line, Diana. You're popular this morning. Caller, welcome aboard with Diana Benson Burns.
How you doing?
Good.
Free advice is always popular. Huh?
Yes.
I wanted to ask her experience in one matter that's a minor matter or could get large in our family. We're grandparents taking care of our grandson, even though our single father has complete our son, single father, has complete legal primary custody of the child, and the mother lives 100 miles away, and there's visitation, and it's been going on 7-8 years. But he is now about to turn 14 in a tough high school in the area where he has to be focused and going away every other weekend. No internet, no homework, nobody in that side of the family ever went past ninth grade, no help. It hurts him academically when he's in the hunt with the rest of the big dogs in the pack for the big money to get you to college. What happens when he starts saying he doesn't want to go? It's a civil matter. You go to court on that. What's been your experience with that reasoning only, that just going away that much at that age is hurting him academically, and he knows it too?
Right. Well, I couldn't give you advice per se. I'm ethically prohibited from giving advice because I'm bound by the same judicial ethics rules that our judges are. But as far as just speaking generally to how the law looks at that issue, that would be something that would need to be raised before the court that has jurisdiction over that. That's not something that would actually be filed in my court because I have limited subject matter jurisdiction. And what that means is that I only hear child support cases. I don't hear cases involving issues with regard to parenting schedules or custody or visitation. That those types of things would be in front of a different judge.
Yeah, so we had, after so many years, the mother's, bless her heart, it's just an Appalachian textbook. She pays $25 a week. And after 5 or 6 years, we started hurting during these times, and we went to court and realized that her pay, the numbers rolled out $382 a month instead of $100, $125 a month, depending on how many weeks. But we pulled back at the last second because as soon as you sign that paper for that extra money, every increase up or down of the male or female, you're back in court every other time a dime goes one way or the other. If you just eat the money and love the child, you don't have to worry about who's making what where, and you keep everybody stable. And stability beats everything, especially when it's working.
Well, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, thank you for any help. Anyway, I'm just want to help the child. You make that magic number, and this child goes all the way as high as you are instead of as low as I am.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
And we have another caller, Diana. Caller, welcome aboard.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I just wanted to call and tell you that both your twin little boys and your husband are very proud of you.
Thanks,
you do
honey.
A good job.
That's my husband speaking, if you hadn't figured that out, Truman.
I think I got that one right quickly.
That's my husband, Nathan. Hi, honey.
Hey, Nathan.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Nathan. Good to see you.
Yes, sir. We won't keep you guys. We just wanted to call in. Brady's sick today, and we wanted to tell you you're doing a good job, honey.
Thank you.
Well, I started to take my ears off, Diana, but we've got another call. Caller, welcome aboard with Diana.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Truman, this is Judy Cooper, Doc Benson's daughter.
Hey, Judy, how are you?
I just wanted to tell Diana how proud we are, but I also want to tell her that my mother's listening today, 94 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she was excited to get to hear this show.
I'm so glad to hear that. I started to call Granny and tell her I was coming over here, but I didn't want to bother her, so
yeah.
I'm glad y'all are listening.
And the other thing I was going to tell you, we were in court one day, and this man got sort of upset with Diana because he didn't like her ruling. And she held up the law book, and she said, I go by the rules of the state of Tennessee. I'm not just making these up. So it's not like she just makes up what she decides sounds good. She has to go by the law. But we're very proud of her.
I'm very impressed with her. I can tell you that. I mean, she holds the family bloodlines all the way at the very top.
She does.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, let's see. We have another caller on the line. We may get the whole Benson clan calling in today. Caller, welcome aboard.
Good afternoon. Hi. I have a question, please. Two children. One lives with mom, one lives with dad. One has graduated high school, one is still home with mom. We did no child support because we did, one child with each. Now that the one child has graduated, can we go back and do child support for the one that's in high school?
Well, again, I can't speak specifically to your case in the event that it's here in Murfreesboro and it comes before me. I can't speak specifically to what might happen in your case. But I will say just in general what happens in those types of situations. And we see those sometimes where there are multiple children and maybe there is a split parenting arrangement, you know, where one child is primarily with one parent and one's with the other. And because of the way that the child support worksheet is, it takes into consideration that fact. And sometimes if the party's income is about the same, then there might not be any child support owed. But once there's no longer an obligation for the older child, there may then be an obligation for the younger child, according to the child support guidelines. And those guidelines are actually accessible on the internet. The Department of Human Services has a website that people can go to, not just lawyers, but individuals can go and look at that website, and it's called the Income Shares Model. And it's these new guidelines, well, I call them new, they came out in, I think it was 2005, but everything is pretty cut and dried. It tells you exactly how child support is supposed to be calculated based on the party's incomes and the number of children and the number of days that child or children spends with each parent. So if you wanted to take a look at that, you actually could do that yourself on the internet.
Sounds perfect. Thank you so much.
Sure.
And we want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, and they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle.
Play It Again Sports! 25 to 50% off. A new shipment of scratch and dent fitness equipment is in at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane. Exercise bikes, ellipticals, treadmills, and more. 25 to 50% off. Save now before the deals are gone.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative, skilled nursing, and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Health Care, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
This is Dean Higby with South Branch Nursery. Join us Saturdays, 11:30 to 12:30 on the Rutherford Home Show, presented by Old South Properties.
This is Josh at South Branch Nursery, your full-service, one-stop garden center open to everyone. Right now we have both cut and live Christmas trees, live wreaths and roping, and lots of other holiday decor.
South Branch Nursery, located at Barfield Road and South Church Street, 893-4030, or on the web at southbranchnursery.com.
In Good Neighbor Events, the Hearts for Homeless Children's Ministry, sponsored by Straight from the Hearts Ministry, is encouraging you to donate new socks, new underwear, clean, slightly used jeans, blouses, and shirts for homeless children here in the community. All sizes are needed. Bring them by Rucker Memorial Chapel on Bradyville Pike, the Cedar Bucket Restaurant on Las Casas Pike, and here at WGNS Radio. Some great plays to enjoy during the holiday. Nuncrackers at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. That's on Friday and Saturday nights at 7:30 and a Sunday matinee at 2. And Nuncrackers continues here in Murfreesboro until December the 18th. and in neighboring Woodbury, a dinner theater with Nonsense. Dinner on Friday and Saturday nights at 6:30 and Sunday at 1 at the Art Center of Cannon County. Handel's Messiah is Sunday afternoon at 3 and Monday evening at 7:30 at MTSU's Wright Music Building. Don't miss The Messiah at MTSU Sunday and Monday. And bring new blankets by WGNS so the Blanket Brigade can give them to homeless persons. And that's Good Neighbor Events.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS AM and FM.
With today's guest, Diana Benson Burns.
It's not like I don't do this every day.
And we want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Gold and Coin Connection. And they're at 2568 South Church Street. And that's beside Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And Pastor Larry Dunn, ERO Ministry, partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly are the owners. And what they do is they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And they have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. If you go in there real soon, you can even lay away for Christmas. And I can tell you, I've been in there, and they do have some great stuff. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today. And that's at the Gold and Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646. And, you know, I was thinking while you were getting some of those calls, Diana, and how complicated a system that you have set rules and you have to follow them right down to the nth degree, but yet it's so full of emotion, and then you have people. Sometimes I'm sure it's hard for you to relate whether or not some of these people are trying to pull something or not, and a lot of it is basically they're using the child sometimes to get back at each other.
Unfortunately, we see that way too often.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of the saddest parts of my whole job really is, mm-hmm. is seeing people that do that. And you know, most of the time it's in post divorce cases. I hear some juvenile cases, not here in Murfreesboro, because those are heard by Magistrate Keith Siskin. But mm-hmm. when I go to Cannon County, I hear juvenile cases there, and mm-hmm. They're not as litigious or mm-hmm. argumentative as the post divorce cases. I think when you've lived with somebody for a long time and have built up a lot of resentment, it's a little bit harder to see things as clearly. And to see that, you know, you're only hurting the child by putting them in the middle like that. So, yeah, unfortunately, we do see that. But the good thing about child support, like you pointed out, is that, and this is part of what I like doing child support, mm-hmm. because it is pretty clear what the law is. There's not a lot of areas, you know, some areas of the law, it just depends on how you decide to look at it mm-hmm. In that particular case. But when it comes to child support, it's pretty clear. We have a very elaborate statutory scheme mm-hmm. that deals with how we set and enforce child support.
Do you have a backup in your court where there have been so many cases, or is each one of them dragging out so long that it's causing you to kind of get behind?
You know, when I first started this job, it was a pretty congested docket. But mm-hmm. now we have plenty of court dates available. We usually mm-hmm. have court here in Murfreesboro 2 days a week, one circuit day and one chancery day. And mm-hmm. so people are able to get on the docket pretty quickly. Now, there are cases, a lot of our cases are ones that have been pending for years, and we keep seeing them back again, mm-hmm. you know, because they paid for a while and then mm-hmm. they stopped, or something has changed and the child support needs to be increased or decreased. So we definitely have ones that have been pending off and on for years at a time. But as far as the actually filing a petition and getting it heard, that's usually, they're able to set that pretty quickly once it gets through the processing by the mm-hmm. child support office and it's ready to be put on the docket. They can get a pretty quick court date.
Is the child ever allowed in your courtroom?
I usually tell people that I prefer that not to be the case. Now, mm-hmm. there are some procedures where they can request that, but for child support purposes, it's actually really not usually any reason for a child to be there. Mm-hmm. because there's no testimony that a child wouldn't be needing to offer regarding anything about the parent's income or anything like that. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes they'll ask the judge for a child to testify in a divorce case where they're arguing over custody or a parenting schedule, and they want the judge to hear the child's preference. And so, of course, sometimes they testify in those cases. But in child support, there's no, really usually no reason for a child to have to come to court. And I try to avoid that.
Now, when a support is set up for a child, what exactly is brought into the equation by the judge when he sets that up, or you deal with it?
The guidelines that we use, it's the state of Tennessee, when they came out with these guidelines that started in 2005. Before that, it was a flat percentage based mm-hmm. on the person that was paying child support. You looked at their income, and it was based on a flat percentage depending on how many children there were. 21% if there was one child, you know, a little bit more if there were two children, a little bit more than that if there were three children, you know. But in 2005, they came out with what they call the income shares model. And what it does, it looks at the mother's income, the father's income, how many days the child or children spend with each parent. It also factors in if there's any cost for health insurance, for work-related child care, and if there are some other extracurricular expenses mm-hmm. that may or may not be grounds to increase or decrease child support, then that might be factored in. But the main things are each party's income and the number of days. And then if there's a significant daycare expense, that'll make a big difference in the child support calculation.
Now, the parent that actually has the responsibility for the child, most of it, is it usually a rule that the other person pays more across the board than the one that is actually taking care of the child? And I was wondering how that is equated in.
Right. Well, I guess it depends on how you look at who they're paying, because mm-hmm. the support order itself only one party owes money to the other party. Mm-hmm. So let's say the primary residential parent has 280 days, which is kind of if they have a standard schedule, well, what used to be called standard, where it was mm-hmm. every other weekend, 2 weeks in the summer, mm-hmm. and alternating holidays, then they'd be with what we call the primary residential parent for about 280 days, and then with what we call the alternate residential parent for about 80 or 85 days. And in that case, if you put in the numbers, unless the primary residential parent is just making tons more money than the alternate residential parent, then the what we call the ARP, the alternate residential parent, is going to owe money to the primary residential parent. And the primary doesn't owe money back. It's just an obligation that the ARP has. The worksheet compares their incomes and calculates what each party's share of the child's support comes to, and then basically the difference is what the ARP owes to the primary. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but, you know, I've heard so many people that have been divorced and they have the kids that are involved, it almost seems like the one that they both want to be primary parents.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of time that money seems to be the issue, because as a primary parent, you're not as much responsible for some of the cost or whatever. But I've always thought of it, and of course, there's nothing that you or anybody else. I mean, the law is set down. You got to go specifically by the law. But it seems like the one that does not have the direct responsibility for the child is kind of losing out on both ends. And I guess I shouldn't look at it that way, because the one having the child, of course, is the lucky one. I mean, right. They really are. They still have the child with them and everything like that. But it's such a factor that it just splits both halves.
Right. And when I was still in private practice, before I started this job as a child support magistrate, I was in private practice for, I guess, about 11 years, from mm-hmm. 96 until 2007. And I did some divorce work, and I also did a lot of mediations. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, that designation of who is the primary residential parent was a bone of contention for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And the number of days, because even if you have something close to split time, there might still be an obligation. But if you have more than standard days, your obligation is going to be lower, because it's mm-hmm. giving you credit for those days. So the fact that those two are linked did make people argue about it a lot. Mm-hmm. But the reason those two are linked is because, you know, when they look at setting support, they're trying to look at, you know, well, obviously the primary residential parent is spending gobs of money putting a roof over the child's head and, you know, clothes on their back and that kind of thing, probably more than could ever be compensated through child support most of the time. So they look at the number of days in determining how to sort of make up the difference so that the child receives the benefit of support from both parents and not just the child, not just the parent they live with and not just the parent that they don't live with.
Have we seen a big difference in going away more from the mom being the one who is the primary parent than what it used to be? Because it used to be almost always.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of the cases I see in my court are the father's the primary parent. I still wouldn't say that it's 50-50, but it's definitely more common for the father to be the primary parent now than it might have been. Even when I started practicing law 15 years ago, it was not nearly as common then as it is now. And it's also a lot more common to see more shared parenting, whereas, you know, used to one parent would have the child most of the time and then the other parent would just get every other weekend and 2 weeks in the summer. Now it's really common to see more of a shared arrangement where it's, if not half and half, at least something where, you know, a third and two thirds instead of such a limited amount of time that used to be standard.
If you think of it logically, I guess the ladies are working now, and a lot of them have jobs and responsibilities that they may not have the flexibility that the dad would have. I'm sure that there's a lot of factors that you have to deal with every time you come in there. But do you ever sit there and look at the law the way it's laid out and say, man, I wish I didn't have to do this?
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't make sense what the law says. And, you know, I don't always agree with it, but I still have to follow it. Unless there's and sometimes there's ways, you know, that the legislature or case precedents might have given us what you might call an out, you know. There might be a reason that I don't have to follow the law because I make this finding and I'm allowed to deviate, for example, if I think that what the law provides is clearly not appropriate.
So in some ways you'd be helpless if you saw maybe one of the parents maybe wanting to really stick it to the other one, and you know they're doing that,
right?
But you're handcuffed, you're tied.
Well, we always have, you know, we have to follow the law, but we also have to keep in mind what's just and fair. And so the law is, at least in the realm of child support, is set up in what I consider a pretty fair way for the most part. Sometimes you'll see maybe some anomalies that don't make a lot of sense, but for the most part, it really does make sense. And the areas where, for example, dealing with enforcement, you know, the types of cases where it would be appropriate to impose incarceration versus the types of cases where it's not, you know, it's the law's fair when it comes to that. And so it gives me the ability to be fair in looking at that. But there are times, and usually it comes when it's more to calculating the amount of money that's owed, that I sometimes look at that child support obligation and I say, well, that just doesn't sound right. And the law does allow me, if it rises to a significant enough level where I don't think it's inappropriate, it does give me the ability to deviate from that.
Do you feel like incarcerating someone is effective?
Most of the time, yes.
I have heard people tell me that how are they going to make the money if they're locked up in jail? And you wouldn't be surprised, but most people out there would be, that most of them come up with some pretty substantial amounts of money while they're in jail.
You're right, and in a very short period of time in a lot of cases. And before I started this job, it didn't make a lot of sense to me why, you know. But as you look at how the law instructs me to consider these cases, you know, there's different factors that you look for in determining whether incarceration is appropriate. And so if it's the type of case that meets those factors, that is by and large the most effective way of getting people to pay. And I mean, there have been numbers of cases where I've had to incarcerate somebody or order that they be taken into custody with a cash bond set, and they've got the money for the cash bond waiting on them when they get to the jail. You know, by the time transport has them booked at the jail, the money's sitting there waiting to be paid.
And that goes right in, and then you take care of that.
It goes through the child support receiving unit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sheriff, the cash bond is paid to the sheriff's department, and then the sheriff department sends it to the clerk, and they send it to the child support receiving unit. It's a statewide distributing office.
And most of the parents justify what they're doing simply because they're saying that the other, the ex, is the one that's going to benefit from the monies, not the child.
Right.
And that seems to be the excuse that most of them throw up.
That's how a lot of people, unfortunately, look at it. They don't think about the fact that the support they're ordered to pay is, in the eyes of the law, their part of taking care of their child. They look at it, because it's going to the other parent, they just look at it as, well, this is extra spending money for the other parent. But in the eyes of the law, and in the way that they've calculated the support obligation, it's actually their percentage share of what this child needs to be supported in the same way, or at least as close as the law can allow, as how the child was supported when the parties were living together.
And it's not the child's fault that they've got two households now, and they've got that extra added expense of trying to take care of that.
Sure.
You know, it's almost like a no-win situation for everybody involved. And the sad thing about it is the child is the loser no matter how you look at it. I mean, you have people fighting, and they're not fighting over the love of the child. That's what's so frustrating, and I know it's got to be for you. And I have seen a number of cases over the years where you know that one party or the other is trying to set the other one up.
Right.
And they have restrictions, as you know, during the time that they're divorced or whatever, and when you have children involved. And inevitably, if there's any conflict at all between the two, they'll try to take it out at the other person.
You're right. You're right. And it's not necessarily the person that owes child support that's always the one misbehaving or taking advantage of the judicial system. That's for sure. There are people, and sometimes it's the person that has the child the majority of the time, you know, that it's the one that's supposed to be receiving child support, that uses that, you know, as something to hang over that other person's head and, you know, is ready to jump at the first sign of any kind of mistake, even if it's unintended. So yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's just the nature of the beast. You know, the judicial system is set up to where everybody's entitled to file something and ask for relief from the court, and sometimes it's justified and sometimes it's not.
Well, one of the biggest conflicts, I guess, is basically during the visitation time. I mean, they'll have a specific date and time set up, and maybe it's a holiday, and maybe one of them is an hour late or 2 hours late, and or there's some confusion in communication, or maybe there's no confusion in communication, and then it just boils over from there. Do you have to deal with any of that?
No.
And
bless your heart. My magic phrase is, I don't have jurisdiction over that, because I don't have what we call subject matter jurisdiction. I'm limited to hearing just issues relating to child support. So if they have problems with the parenting schedule, that gets heard by either Judge Rogers or Judge Taylor or one of the judge that's assigned to that divorce case.
And I know you have a great working relationship with the judges.
Oh,
I mean, they are
yeah.
just super out there.
I agree. I think our judicial district is blessed. We have great judges. Mm-hmm. We have great lawyers. I've loved practicing law here, and I love doing the job that I do now here.
You fit in well here. I mean, you really do.
Well, thank you.
Want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar. And they're located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. And they have something for everyone on their menu, from steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items that are unique to Blue. They have 6 items for lunch at just $6. And enjoy their Sunday live jazz brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the game on the big screen TVs, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza, and be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. Blue Restaurant and Bar, owners Marty Brown and Greg Pogue.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. This is Steve Grimsley with Zippy Shell. Are you looking for storage? Perhaps you're preparing your home for sale, downsizing, or just in need of some extra space. Well, then you should give us a call. We offer convenient, affordable storage solutions right here in Rutherford County. We deliver a storage container to you, you pack it, and we'll pick it up and store your goods in our secure facility. We are locally owned and operated. To check out our grand opening specials, give us a call at 216-7879 or visit us at zippyshell.com. Save time, save money, save everything.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
With today's guest, Diana Benson Burns.
And we want to talk about a conflict. One of the ladies that I used to work with, Sandra Cullen, was a big UT fan, a graduate. She was in the band. I mean, she was one of the majorettes. And her husband is from Kentucky. And it was very funny. When they would play football, Sandra would have a pillow cover that was orange, and he would have a pillow color that was Kentucky. And did he rub it in this last Saturday, Nathan, we're talking about?
You know, I have to say, Nathan's from Kentucky. We have the same situation like what you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And I have sat through so many devastating Kentucky losses, mm-hmm, when Kentucky got beat by Tennessee, and some of them when they ought to have won.
26 in a row, we might mention that.
Yeah. Some of them where Kentucky ought to have won, you know, and that one that went into
they should have
so many overtimes, you know. Mm-hmm. We sat through so many of those losses that when Kentucky won, I was very happy for him. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of halfway converted me because, you know, I was telling you, we've got two boys, and we had a deal that when we got married, if we had, I grew up a UT fan, and mm-hmm, he grew up a Kentucky fan. So when we got married, we said if we had girls, they could be UT fans, and if we had boys, we'd, you know, teach them to be Kentucky fans. And we got two boys, so now we've kind of all started rooting for Kentucky. But my family will not.
Oh no! Don't tell me that.
My family would not be happy that I'm publicly acknowledging that. But
everybody bleep that one out. That does not work. Now Nathan came from Kentucky, and he's here, and Nathan's in real estate.
Yes, he's a realtor with Prudential.
Uh-huh.
He was born in Kentucky, which is why he's such a big Kentucky fan, and his father, mm-hmm, lives there now in northern Kentucky. And then they moved down here to West Tennessee when he was young, mm-hmm, and he got to grow up listening to people talk about UT football, so I'm glad that he finally got to see Kentucky win for the first time since he was a young child. But he moved here to Middle Tennessee to go to MTSU and just, mm-hmm, stayed. And he's been in real estate now for quite a while since our children were little
How's
babies.
How's real estate business going right now?
He's hanging in there. It's definitely slower than it was for the first few years he was doing it. But he's with Prudential out there, mm-hmm, on our side of town and likes it. And he also does a lot of property management. So, mm-hmm, that keeps him pretty busy. And he's going back to school at MTSU. So,
oh, wow.
He's staying pretty busy.
Well, bless his heart.
Yep.
The whole family just seems to be, you guys are doing something all the time.
Yeah. Yep.
What about Granny?
She's doing great. She's at NHC. She's, mm-hmm, 93. My kids can
That's
keep up with it better than I can. She might be 94. She had a birthday in July, but she's doing great.
When I was young and growing up, they lived over in the Mitchell Nielsen area.
Yes, yep.
And I was trying to remember if it was Clark or not, but it was past Mitchell Nielsen at the time.
Yes.
And they were such sweet people. I mean, they were always involved in something. And I've known Jimmy and Jerry ever since I was a kid. And Judy, yeah, of course. And in fact, I think Judy's a little bit older than I am.
Is she? Yeah, she's in between, and Jimmy was the oldest, and, mm-hmm, then Judy was, I think, about 5 years younger, and then my dad's about 5 years younger than
You know, every
her.
One of them worked in the store at one time.
Yeah, yep.
And it was one of the most popular stores in Murfreesboro at that time, and it's been such a pleasure to meet you. I tell you what, when Mark told me that you were going to be on today, it just absolutely, a bulb lit up in my head, and I said, oh my goodness, it's just like bringing back memories for me.
Yeah, well, thank you, I've enjoyed being on here.
And I appreciate what you do. You do a great job. I've heard a lot of compliments on you, and I know it's a tough job, but I'm so proud that we have you there.
Well, thank you, I really appreciate that.
Good to see you, Diana.
You too.